Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hi there, and welcome to the Explaining History podcast. And we're following the Russia theme that we've been establishing in the last few weeks, looking at the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union. If you recall, the last podcast we were doing was on the defence of Moscow in the winter of 1941 and the outcome of that defence. Was a catastrophic failing for the German army, who came within 25 kilometres of the city centre and were of the final seizure of Stalin's capital. The reason for the failure of the attempt to seize Moscow was primarily at face value, down to the freezing cold weather and the snows which caused the German army to grind to a halt. But at a deeper level, one can see all sorts of fundamental problems within the operation of Hitler's war machine. The supposedly inferior Russians and the supposedly chaotic Bolshevik regime that Hitler looked on with contempt had the foresight to put antifreeze in their fuel and had the ability to fight in winter conditions in a way that the German army had not mastered. And therefore, it could be more reasonably argued that there was chaos and poor planning and poor organisation deep within the German war machine. Now, in this podcast, we're going to look at the siege of Leningrad, and I'm going to spend a few podcasts looking on this. This was the longest siege of the war. It had an unimaginable toll in terms of civilian deaths. And I think when we look at things like the siege of Leningrad, it helps to kind of invert a mythology about the First and the Second World Wars that we all popularly cling to, the idea that the First World War was kind of like the bad war and the Second World War, quote-unquote, the good war. The reality is that the First World War was primarily fought between combatants, and the Second World War was primarily and overwhelmingly fought against civilians. The levels of mass civilian deaths in the Second World War dwarfs the First World War. We have all sorts of notions about the Second World War because of the decisive conclusion, the monstrous nature of the opponent, and the more simple, at first glance, more simple moral judgments that one can make, though obviously as you drill down into those, it becomes far from simple and a far more kind of nuanced and complex picture where The simple idea of good guys and bad guys doesn't really exist. So, looking at Leningrad, just as the fate of Moscow was decided, a drama to the West was unfolding. There had been three army groups that had invaded the Soviet Union in the summer of 1941, and it was Army Group North that made its way through the Baltic states and all the way to Leningrad, which sits in the just on the Gulf of Finland. And it was the Finns who had been invaded by Stalin's armies in the winter of 1939 to 1940, who eventually, after having inflicted heavy losses on the Soviet Union, were forced to concede territory, who now saw an opportunity for revenge. They had been given new equipment by Nazi Germany and encouraged to join Operation Barbarossa. The Germans advanced from Norway, and they established a perimeter close to Murmansk. The Finns crossed just beyond the 1939 frontier, and with the Germans on the 15th of September, they encircled Leningrad. One of the reasons for Hitler's decision to encircle and then attempt to destroy Leningrad, much as his much vaunted ambition later and realised to raise Paris to the ground, was that the centres of both the French and the Russian revolutions needed to be symbolically destroyed, as these were, in Hitler's ideas, two key moments in European history that needed to be undone. Hitler famously said that his job was to undo the French Revolution itself, and kind of all the modern political notions of the individual that stem from it. The siege of the city would last for 2 years, and it would cost the defenders of the city and the civilians of the city more lives than all the combatants and all the civilian deaths from Britain and America combined. It was utterly merciless. Particularly, it was a war fought against children. 2,000 children were killed when the Luftwaffe attacked a train of refugees at Lkovo, for example. The was placed in the hands of Kliment Voroshilov. He was a Stalin loyalist. He had no trust for or liking of professional soldiers and understood nothing about a warfare particularly. There were large convoys of food sent from Moscow to the city. But Voroshilov, in his infinite wisdom, decided that to accept a need for food would represent defeatism, and this was not the sort of thing that Stalin wished to hear. So he diverted supplies away from the city to other fronts and decided that there would be impromptu and improvised attacks on the Germans, which only ended in slaughter. There's an interesting parallel here between the defence of the city of Moscow brought about by Zhukov and the defence of Leningrad led by Voroshilov, to show that in these circumstances what's required is a soldier, not a commissar. Max Hastings writes, a despairing Lieutenant Yushkevich wrote in his diary last diary entry before being killed, "Our soldiers are only issued with old rifles, and we have pathetically few machine guns. We haven't any grenades either. There are no medics. This is not a military unit. We are simply cannon fodder." And that's very revealing in itself. There was still a sufficient amount of fear of Stalin and of the NKVD and the party system in general to encourage cannon fodder tactics, i.e. It's better to relentlessly fling men at the Germans and hope something turns up than to appear to be doing nothing whilst trying to come up with a better strategy. By the 8th of September, the encirclement of the city was complete and the siege formally began. Zhukov is sent to relieve Voroshilov and arrives by light aircraft. And when Voroshilov returns to Moscow in a moment of uncharacteristic bravery, he actually shouts Stalin down, claiming that to Stalin, you have yourself to blame for all of this. You're the one who annihilated the old guy of the army. You had the best generals killed. Stalin attempted to kind of shrug and to bluff his way out of this one. The anger that Voroshilov shows is close to getting him a date with the firing squad, but in the kind of the pressures of the war and the need for loyalists of any nature, this manages to save his bacon somewhat. Zhukov, before he was called back to Moscow, went to work quickly countermanding much of what Voroshilov had instructed, reorganising the defences of Leningrad. He saved the Baltic fleet from being scuttled in the harbour, assuming, as Voroshilov had, that it would be a way of preventing German ships from accessing past Kronstadt Island. When Zhukov countermanded this order, it meant that the guns of the Soviet Navy at Leningrad were capable of shelling German ground forces and protecting Soviet ground troops. There were several attempts to break through the German blockade. On the 17th of September, there was the biggest attempt to break the blockade, which was defeated by wave after wave of German artillery fire, losing thousands of lives. Again, Max Hastings writes, a Marine officer, Nikolai Vavin, described an attempt to reinforce the island fortress of Oreshek on Lake Lagoda. Our guys just didn't stand a chance. The Germans quickly spotted us from the air, and it became a mass execution. The enemy's planes first bombed and then machine gunned us. Out of my own landing group of 200 men, only 14 reached the shoreline. It would appear, though, that Zhukov was as partial to the cannon fodder attack as Stalin or his commissars may have been. Zhukov was unmoved by losses and threw men into the breach, and basically knew that manpower was all he had. There were huge casualties and virtually no medical facilities, and Zhukov used the old tactic of blocking units, NKVD and Red Army men, who marched behind the Red Army, shooting any soldiers that attempted to flee or turn.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST. Code ACAST.
Ground. The Germans bombarded the Red Army not just with artillery, but also with propaganda, sending out loudspeaker messages to the battlefield, saying things such as, "It's time to assemble at your extermination points again. We shall bury you on the banks of the Neva." However, one thing that Stalin and Zhukov didn't quite understand was that there was to be no full frontal assault on Leningrad. Instead, Leningrad was to be starved into non-existence. There was to be no attempt to take the city. Hitler simply saw it as an irrelevance and something that could be bulldozed as soon as the war was over. The Nazis assumed that the Russians would be able to supply each citizen within Leningrad with no more than 250 grams of bread a day, which would be something that would starve the peoples there to death slowly. It is worth observing how starvation mapped into the German calculations for the Eastern Front, not only the mass starvation of Jewish prisoners in Auschwitz, Birkenau, those who weren't gassed would have a lifespan of about 3 months, which would come to an end largely as a result of overwork, disease and hunger. And the plan, the general plan Ost, to starve to death some 30 million Russians and therefore create the living space for a new expanded master race to inhabit. Part of the rather mercenary logic of the German army was that there was no point in risking the lives of any German soldiers, that the city was of no value, and that simply leaving it to die was a far more effective strategy. Hitler said, "Petersburg, the poisonous nest from which for so long Asiatic venom has spewed forth into the Baltic, must vanish from the earth's surface. The city is already cut off. It only remains for us to bomb and bombard it, destroy its sources of water and power, then deny the population everything it needs to survive." This idea of Asiatic venom, this was kind of obviously racial code for the dangerous mixture in Hitler's eyes of kind of Slavdom and Jewry invading pristine Europe, and that St. Petersburg was really a kind of an abomination, because if you remember, obviously it's called Leningrad, but he viewed it as Petersburg. It had been the city of Tsar Peter the Great that had been built on the Baltic along European lines to give Russia, an Asiatic country in Hitler's eyes, a European outlet onto the Baltic, and it looked very much like a European city of the 18th century when it was constructed. So with this in mind, the first aerial attacks on Leningrad destroyed warehouses along the waterside holding the food reserves of the city. The streets were kind of sticky with molten sugar that poured from the burning warehouses, which burned for days on end. And the citizens of the city very quickly learned what was in store for them. Elena Skarabina writes in her diary, "We're approaching the greatest horror. Everyone is preoccupied with only one thought. We're to get something edible so as not to starve to death. We have returned to prehistoric times. life has been reduced to one thing, the hunt for food. And it was at this point that the citizens of Leningrad understood really the nature of Hitler's war of annihilation, that there was to be no surrender, there were to be no prisoners, because this was a racial war, that they were of the wrong racial type for Hitler and must be removed from the face of the earth. Quickly, citizens of Leningrad learned to eat anything that they possibly could do. They began to make soup and make bread and cakes with grass. This is a kind of a standard thing in countries that where famines occur on a fairly regular basis. That you look at Russia or China or any other country that has repeated famines, and very quickly things like grass and bark are made into cakes, even though they are very little nutritional value. A black market emerges. The city's authorities that had stamped out any kind of capitalistic exchange lose all control over the buying and selling of goods. People sell matches, candles, items of clothing, whatever they can do for quantities of rubles here and there. Until, of course, money itself proves to be completely useless, and then there is simply a barter and exchange. Pets quickly vanish from the streets as they are consumed, and the entire city's parks, gardens, and other public spaces are turned over to the growing of vegetables. There was very little fuel, and this would be catastrophic to the people of Leningrad during the long, cold Russian winter. It would have as terrible an effect on them as it did on the German army. The Germans themselves sent their tanks to the south and to the Moscow theatre of operations, where active fighting was more important. And the besiegers created a series of bunkers and gun emplacements around the city where it could be shelled on a daily basis, and the operation was one that was essentially static as far as the besiegers were concerned. The only movement of Russians out of the city would be either attacking soldiers or fleeing civilians, and both were bombarded with artillery and mortar fire, and there was essentially a killing ground outside the city that meant that virtually nobody could get out. One Russian officer, Red Army officer, Vasily Khoroshevin, wrote on the 25th of October to his wife, "I've received a letter from you, and I cannot describe the pleasure it gave. Today is the sixth that I am spending in a cellar of a mason's shop, only accessible by crawling. I sit here, directing fire, while mines and shells explode around me, shaking the earth. It's impossible to get out for water. Hot tea is our greatest luxury, and rations are brought to us by night. Yesterday a shell exploded between me and a reconnaissance man, shredding the tails of my greatcoat. I was unhurt, except my gas mask case hit me in the head. A fellow soldier manning the defences spoke of the hunger that the Red Army was racked with. All of our soldiers on the front look like ghouls, emaciated by hunger and cold. They are in rags, filthy and very, very hungry." And so, as Hitler had intended, the war was being waged against the defenders of Leningrad and against the civilians through starvation. Artillery was the other method, and the city was shelled regularly throughout the day, but particularly at times when civilians were out, were likely to be out of their houses in largest numbers, and the moments when they would be queuing for bread or trying to find food. The city required 100 tons of food a day in order to just maintain starvation levels, or just above starvation levels of sustenance. That meant that any disruption to that supply line was going to be catastrophic. On the 30th of November, only 61 tons got through. Loaves were baked in from any materials that could be that people could get their hands on. Some of the food that had spoiled, or the flour that had spoiled, often from ships that had been sunk or from that had been affected in some way, created food that was essentially rotting even before it had got to the oven. Throughout the city, there was an air of fatalism that the end for the people of Leningrad was near, and that they would die, and that there would be nobody left to tell their ancestors what had happened. However, the reality was that the siege was broken, that the city did survive, that the Nazi invasion of the Soviet Union did fail, and that 3.5 years later there were Red Army soldiers laying siege to Berlin. One reason why the siege was broken was because the Red Army managed to supply the city for sufficiently long enough that there was no decision for an invasion of the city, an assault on the city. Instead, it was believed that the city would simply die out, and it doesn't do. And again, this can be seen as another one of Hitler's miscalculations on the Eastern Front, which, when you look at it through all these podcasts we've done on Operation Barbarossa, they seem to rack up ever more significantly. So we're going to look more at the Siege of Leningrad next time when we focus on this topic. But if you found this useful and you'd like to read more original journalism, do check out the Explaining History Patreon page. You can find it, the link to it in the blurb on this podcast. And I hope you find this useful, and I'll catch you next time. All the best. Thank you and goodbye.